We are here at the very end of the book of Ecclesiastes, and so we're going to finish out our series this morning in Ecclesiastes. We're going to be in chapter 12, and so if you want to turn there, if you grab one of the Bibles on that table in the back, it's on page 579 of those, page 579. It's Ecclesiastes chapter 12. This is the end. It's the end of Ecclesiastes. I hope you've enjoyed the series as we've worked through it and we studied through it. I think I said when we started the series, this is something that I had not experienced in church, a study through the book of Ecclesiastes, and I was excited to do it even for myself, just for me, but also to work through it for all of you. And here we are in chapter 12, ready to finish it up. We're going to be looking in verses 8 to 14 and to finish the book this morning. But the teacher is going to transition to his conclusion. He's worked through his whole argument, his whole thoughts, and he works into his conclusion here. And it may be the most direct and the most significant portion of his text when we get to it. When you read... This is how I felt when I read the last few verses of this chapter. I went, you waited this long? You wrote an entire book and buried the lead, and now here it is in the last few verses. We went through 12 chapters of your pessimistic, negative, hopeless outlook on life, and you waited until the last verses to put this in there. But it is. It may be the most direct and significant thing that he writes in this book. He repeats his theme. He's going to return to his thought and statement that started the whole discourse. He says it in verse 8, and so he returns to that negative, pessimistic outlook, but he's going to switch it really fast. But verse 8, this has been his theme. Meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher. Everything is meaningless. And again, some of your versions are going to say vanity, of vanities. Everything is vanity. For the teacher, what this verse represents in this portion of the book is, you remember how we started? Remember how I started this whole discussion? Remember how I started this book? I said at the very beginning, if you don't remember, I'll remind you, everything is meaningless. Everything is vanity. And I said it again and again, over and over. And everything, it is the most meaninglessness that you can imagine, is what he's repeating here in verse 8. And his point was, and it has been, without God, life has no significance. If you don't believe in God, or if you don't live like you believe in God, then life lacks substance. It's pointless. And that word vanity, that word meaningless, it's something that's not there. Right, it's something that's not able to be grasped. And again, the illustration we use, the best picture we have of this is if you went outside this morning and you breathed into the air, your hot breath in the cold morning would come out. You'd see it, but if you tried to grab it, it's not actually there. Right, it's a vapor and it's gone. It's intangible. It's not there anymore. And that's how the teachers described life without God, or living life as though you don't believe in God. There's no substance to it. It's not significant. Pick an area of life, and if you leave God out of it, it's not as satisfying. It's not satisfying. Whatever the area is, whatever the facet of life that you have, you leave God out of it, and it's not satisfying. It's not significant. It's worthless. And so the teacher transitions into his conclusion with that reminder in verse 8. Remember how we started? Remember the theme? Remember this? Nothing is significant without God. It's a reminder there. And then he kind of moves into giving his credentials here at the very end. And he speaks in third person. So when you read this, it seems like somebody's talking about him. He's talking about him. He's just writing in the third person. So imagine this like the leaf about the author on the inside of a book where the author writes about themselves, but they talk about themselves in the third person. That's this. That's what he's going to do here. And so verse 9 says this. Not only was the teacher wise, but he also imparted knowledge to the people. He pondered and searched out and set in order many proverbs. The teacher searched to find just the right words, and what he wrote was upright and true. So he's kind of giving his credentials, and he's kind of looking back at everything he just wrote and kind of making a comment on it, on the process. The teacher was living and navigating life in its situations, and navigating the deepest questions of life out of a fear of God, out of faith in God, right? The teacher was wise. Right? The conclusions that he was looking for, he was pursuing them out of a faith in God, and with the goal of passing on his knowledge to others. Right? He was wise, but he also imparted knowledge, verse 9, to the people. So he was letting his faith guide his conclusions, but he also wanted to pass on those conclusions about life to others. He wanted others to benefit from his wisdom. And so what he says is that in order to give us the best product that he could, be the most beneficial to us, he pondered, verse 9 says. He searched out and he set in order his words of wisdom, the conclusions that his fear and his faith in God led him to. And so these two verses, verses 9 and 10, if nothing else, they give a great challenge for pastors and preachers when you read these verses. The teacher wanted his words to have depth, right? Not just surface significance. And so he pondered what he was going to say. He wanted them to be deep. He wanted them to be consequential and significant. And he was diligent in his preparation and his study. He says he searched out to make sure that what he was going to say was significant. He put the study and the time in, and he ensured that what he was going to say, his words were going to be orderly. He arranged them in a way to be effective. He wanted to choose just the right words, verse 10 says. He searched to find just the right words, the what he was meant to say. In some versions, when you read this, it says that they were the delightful words, but he's not, that translation gives you the wrong idea. He's not trying to please people with his words. He's trying to affect people. He's trying to have an effect on the people who are listening to him. And he wants his words to be effective, to make a difference. He's not taking his influence lightly, and his standard, his goal, the bar is, according to himself, is that his words, his writings, stand up to God's standard for truth, and they stand up to the test of applying them. Right? He searched to find, verse 10, just the right words. Right? There was depth, there was diligence, there was intention, and what he wrote as a result was upright and true, right? That's his goal. That's the bar for his writings, that they stand up to God's standard for truth. And when you apply them to your life, that they are effective in application, that they stand up to being upright when you test them by, well, let's see if this is true. Let's see if this holds up. That's his goal. And when people hear what he has to say and then apply them to life and practice them, do they stand up? Are they upright? Are they true? The teacher is saying he places a high premium on truth. And we'll see it's not just any truth. It's God's truth. That's the goal. That's the bar. And so the teacher says, and again, this is him speaking of his own work, and he says, what I've given you here are the conclusions that come out of my fear and my faith in God. And I've given them the gravity, I've given them the diligence that they deserve. I've worked to make them make sense and be effective so that they're not only clearly the truth, but that when you apply what I've said in this book to your life, that they will hold up, they will have an effect. And again, that's a great challenge for preachers. And it's a really good reminder for you about when you're listening to preachers or pastors or anybody with significance. Are they seeking depth? Are they being very careful and considerate about what they're trying to influence you with? Are they making sure that their words are true and that when you apply them to your life, that they're not going to mislead you, that they're going to hold up, that you're going to be able to honor God because of what they've told you? As a great filter for those of you that listen to people like me or people on the TV and on the radio to use that and use these verses and go back to Ecclesiastes chapter 12 verses 9 and 10 and say, this doesn't hold up. There's no depth here. There was no preparation here. This is just surface level, and you have no concern about what this does to my life if I try to apply this. This isn't following the standard of God's truth. So these verses, if nothing else, are a really great challenge for me And I hope a really great challenge for you in what we listen to and how we communicate the Bible. And so having said that, in verses 9 and 10, the teacher broadens his statements from here, from just about him to everybody that kind of that writes as he does. And this is kind of what he's done in his book. You're familiar with this now. He has a thought, right? And then he kind of lets that thought wander for a moment before he gets back on track with where he was going. And so that's what he does here. He was thinking about himself. He's saying, hey, I want to make sure that you understand that I feel convicted about everything I wrote here. And then he kind of starts thinking about other people that kind of write like he does. And so his thought was a defense, an explanation of himself, but now his mind wanders to the writings and the words of other men like him who they're writing, they're teaching out of their faith and their fear of God, and they're writing for truth, they're writing for effect. So he says this in verse 11. He says, the words of the wise are like goads. They're collected sayings like firmly embedded nails given by one shepherd. Be warned, my son, of anything in addition to them, of making many books, there is no end, and much study wearies the body. So he says here that the words and the writings of men like him, who write out of their faith and their fear of God, who want their words to be true and have effect in people's lives, that's their conviction. Those words that speak to godliness and faith and life are goads, he says. They should be goads. I'm going to assume you're familiar with goads, and then I'm going to tell you and remind you what a goad is anyway, just because I've never used one. Not at least with sheep and things like that. But a goad is something that those in an agriculture or shepherding world, it was that long, sharp, pointed stick that they used to prod cattle and move sheep. And he's saying, so wise words, like the teachers, words that are upright and true and godly, they should motivate us. They should challenge us. They should poke us a little bit. And they'll hurt a little bit because the poke hurts. But the goad, when it pokes, it's not meant to wound. It's not meant to cause deep harm. It's meant to get them moving, right? Get them moving in the right direction, the way that they need to go. And so that goad, that poke of the wise words, the words written out of faith and fear in God, it's going to hurt a little bit. It's going to hurt, but it's going to, and it should motivate when it hurts. It should move us. It should have an effect on us. They're a goad. He says, the New Living Translation says it really well. It says that the words of the wise, like the teacher, are painful but helpful. They hurt, but they help. And the teacher writes that if you have a collection of them, verse 11, so the words are like a goad, and their collected sayings are like firmly embedded nails. And if you have a collection of those goads, a collection of those words, those writings, it can be foundational. There he says that it's like a collection. Firmly embedded nails. Now some of your versions have the teacher talking about words that come from masters of collections, right? You see, or maybe masters of assemblies. Assemblies meaning gathering of things. This is another one of those Hebrew literary formulas that sometimes is difficult to explain, but I think the best translation of it is just a collection of sayings with a predominant theme. And the predominant theme in this case is faith. It's fear of God. It's godliness. It's understanding God. That's the common theme. And so that's the master of these collections. And he says it can be foundational. He says these sayings are like firmly embedded nails. The other time that this phrase is used in the Bible is in Ezra, and they're talking about a firm foothold. And so if you really, if you want to imagine this like a shoe with nails through the bottom of it to get a really good grip, almost like you would imagine a soldier's sandal back then in those days. They would put nails through them to get a good grip on the ground. That's really what he's describing here, is that if you have a collection of these goads, there's some firm foothold for you there, a good foundation for you. And maybe you experienced this in the last 2 days because of what we're dealing with here in Erie. But you've probably experienced this also in the spring or other times like that, where the car starts to get stuck in the snow or starts to get stuck in the mud, and somebody inevitably says, can you help me push out? And you think, okay, yeah, I'll give it a shot. I remember one time when I was in college, there was a really hard, cold rain turned to snow overnight. And so when we got up in the morning and guys were trying to leave for different places, every single car was stuck on ice. And so we were trying to push guys out, and somebody had the brilliant idea of putting the floor mat underneath one of the tires to see if that, have you ever done that? It doesn't work. Yeah, if you've ever done that, it just, you're asking to be shot in the stomach by a rubber mat is really what you're, so side note, don't do that with 2x4s. You're asking for a poke. You're asking for a prod, but it'll remind you and it'll move you and it'll challenge you. You know what? I shouldn't do that again. But if you've ever been on the other side of that, like trying to push them and your feet are just going, you're going nowhere. You're just deep in the mud. There's no traction whatsoever. Maybe a little bit of better footwear might give you some help, especially on the ice. And that's really what he's trying to give you the idea of, this firm foundation, this firm foothold. If you can get a collection of these sayings, a collection of these goads, these words written by men who fear God, who are writing out of their faith in God, being led by God because they want to motivate people to truth and godly living, then that's a really great benefit to you. It can be foundational. If you can get these, if you have a stack of writings like that, a collection of these goads, it's a benefit to you because it should not only motivate and move you in a variety of ways, but those writings are foundational and they can stabilize your life because in reality, he says in verse 11, they're given by one shepherd. And you'll notice that if you're looking at the New King James Version or the English Standard or the Christian Standard, they capitalize the word shepherd there. The New International Version doesn't, but they capitalize it. That's because the teacher's clear meaning is that God is the source of the writings that come out of these men, their faith and their fear. And we would say that God inspired those wise writings, that he was the motivation behind it, he was the source behind it. He gave them those words to write. And that we would say that God is then he's the one shepherd. He's the one that gives the goads. He's the one that gives those words that stand up to application, that resound of truth, that have effect in life. And the teacher's words reach beyond his time and his audience because he's telling them, look, you've got my words. My words are a goad. They should move you to faith. They should move you to application. They will hold up if you put these to practice because they're truth. They're not just from me. They're given from the one shepherd who I'm listening to as well. And he's saying, look, if you can get more of these and you can listen to these, you're going to have a sure foundation. And in their time and in their day, they had the Pentateuch. They had the first five books of our Old Testament. They had some books of history, a handful of those books that are in the Old Testament. They had the Psalms and a couple of minor prophets. And so he's saying, if you get your hands on the Psalms, if you can get your hands on some of these minor prophets or some of these books of history, if you look at those, man, that is going to be a benefit to you more than just mine. If you can get a lot of those, it's a variety of different pokes and prods, and it'll be a good foundation for your feet. It'll be a good foundation of you. But today, we're not limited like they are in what we have. In the teacher's words speak to the value of the book that you are holding in your lap today. If you have a stack of writings whose source is the one shepherd in the meaningless life, that will give you foundation. It will give you substance, and it will provide and produce movement of significance in your life because it's from the one shepherd. If you have a collection of these things, it will be a significant foundation for your life if you can get your hands on it. And you've got one on your lap. This will give meaning to a meaningless life. It will give foundation to a life where without it, it's a vapor and it disappears quickly. The goads and the foundation in this book will help you deal with and address and counteract the insignificance we feel at times in life. Will give life substance, and take that away and you've got meaninglessness. You take this book away and there's not a significance or substance that you need, that foundation for life. And if you walk out of here with anything else, it's that this is the most important thing that you own. Because this is what will make the difference. This is what will have effect. This is where you find truth. And this is what will give your life substance. If you walk out with nothing today, you have this. This book cuts through the meaninglessness of life. So that's what he says, that the words of the wise, they're goads, but their collected sayings are like these firmly embedded nails, this foundation that's given by the one shepherd. And then he says in verse 12, be warned then, my son or daughter, if anything, of anything in addition to these words, to these collection of sayings, of making many books, there is no end, and much study wearies the body. So he gives you this, I wanted you to see what I was doing here. And then he warns us. And I know it's a warning because he says, be warned. All right? That's in verse, that's a pretty clear indicator. You're like, all right, I get what you're doing here. Be warned. What am I looking out for? He says, tread lightly with anything written outside of what that one shepherd has given you. Be very careful with sources, with writings of anything outside of this book, outside of what the one shepherd has given you for truth and effect. And there's a lot of books out there. There's a lot of sources out there, but much of it is unfit. It's not upright. It's not true. It won't have the effect that you need, and you will weary yourself, he says. Much study wearies the body. You will weary yourself searching for answers outside of what God has already given you. It will be exhausting. There are a lot of competing thoughts and opinions out there, and it can be exhausting trying to figure out, who do I believe? How do I trust? Is this the right way to do it? I've seen so many different ways of doing one thing. Take dieting, for example. I don't mean to pick on dieting, but there are so many out there. And some of you and some of us have tried so many different ways of doing it, and they feel like they're competing because one person's telling you only eat meat and the other person's telling you don't eat any meat. And you're like, you both seem okay though, so I should just do both and eat meat and everything else, or eat none of it. Because there's so many competing thoughts out there, and it's tough. Now that's not inspired truth. That's not biblical truth, right? That's just trying to figure out how to get your health in order, right? But there are so many writings out there about truth, about where you've come from or what your purpose in life is and all of these different things. There are so many sources out there that you can go to and you can look to, and you can be exhausted in trying to figure out which one's right and which one's wrong. You're going to get wearied by that. You can waste a lot of time doing that. But here's the truth that the teacher is telling us. You don't need them. You don't need them because you have the foundation on hand right here. You've got the source of truth. You've got a book that teaches what stands up to application and has effect in life. You don't need those other things. And if you have the foundation of a book that's written by men, guided by God, the source of truth, and those writings are upright, they're applicable and true, forged out of faith and fear of God the Creator, then don't stray very far from them when looking for advice. Don't stray very far from this book when looking for help and looking for thoughts on different areas of life. Start here and don't get too far away from it. Often words or advice or writings that are not rooted in faith and fear of God, that don't come from the shepherd, they don't poke us. When we look for thoughts and advice outside of this book, very often they're not goads. They don't prod us. And if they do, it's usually not in the right direction. They don't really hurt when you read them. And if anything, they're affirming. They make me feel better. They make me feel better about myself. Those writings and influences out there that we go to, they give us warm fuzzies about who we are and where we're at, and they reassure us and they reinforce us in how we think and how we feel. I don't want reinforcing how I think because I know I'm not smart like this. The Bible says, don't trust yourself, trust God. I don't want to hear someone say, you're right. I want to hear someone say, you're wrong, and this is where you need to adjust, because I can tell something's wrong. Don't affirm me. Poke me. Hurt me a little bit. Push me in the right direction. And that's what this book does. And a lot of times, those sources and those opinions and those thoughts outside of this book, they don't hurt. And all they do is make us feel better about ourselves and where we're at. And they're very effective in making a meaningless life more meaningless. But wise words, words from God that are rooted in faith and fear and that are true, they stand up to application and they are effective in making the meaningless life meaningful. They hurt some, but they force us to move, and they give us that sure foundation. And some writings, and I'll say this, there are some writings and there's some books or some authors out there, godly men who write, and they help clarify for us the wisdom in the Bible to make it easier to understand. I'm not saying don't read anything outside the Bible. I'm saying don't get too far away from this when you're basing your decisions and your opinions and looking for truth. Don't get too far away from this collection. 2 Timothy, Paul writes to Timothy, and familiar words to many of you, but a good reminder. 2 Timothy chapter 3, verses 16 and 17, Paul reminds us that all Scripture, this book, this collection of goads, this embedded nails, it is God-breathed, and it is useful for everything, for teaching, for rebuking, and correcting, and training in righteousness. And the reason that we have it is so that the servant of God, you and me, we may be thoroughly equipped for every good work. We will be prepared for every situation. We will have firm footing in every area of life because of this book. This is where we need to look first. This is what we need to go to first. Peter writes in his second letter to his readers in 2 Peter chapter 1, verse 3. Talking about God. He has given his divine power, His inspiration, his leading has given us everything that we need for a godly life through our knowledge of him, which comes from this. And he called us by his own glory and his goodness. This is what we need. This book, this collection, this is where we base our decisions. This is our source. And don't stray very far from it, because it will weary you and you'll get so many competing different messages. You'll get lost in the weeds when you already have all that you need for life and godliness. And the teacher makes it clear that that's the warning, right? Be warned. That's the warning, and it's on you to take this to heart, right? This is a reflexive warning. You be warned. You warn yourself, he's saying. It's your responsibility to make this happen, to make this collection the foundation and the motivation for your life and cut through the meaninglessness. It's on you to choose, to prioritize this collection, these words. So he puts that on you. And then he continues to his finale. And again, we get to it, and like me, maybe you're going to think, you waited this long. Now we're going to get to this. Now we're here. Look at verse 13. Now all has been heard. Here is the conclusion of the matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the duty of all mankind. For God will bring every deed into judgment, including every hidden thing, whether it is good or evil. Now that he said everything, he gives us the lead that he buried at the very beginning and says, here's what it boils down to. And here's my summary of what he says here. The duty of mankind, of all mankind, is to fear God and keep his commandments. That's it. The duty of mankind is to fear God and obey him. He has held on to this for 12 chapters. But here it is, and it is significant, and it is profound. Because what he's saying is, to be human is to fear God and obey him. It is the nature of humanity. Like I said, he gets super profound at the very end here. But to be human is to fear God and obey him. And if you were wondering, if you've wondered it in the past, and you were wondering, what is your purpose in life? What's your purpose in life? When you boil down all the roles that you have, maybe you're a father or a mother or a manager or an employee or a man or a woman or a child or whatever it is, when you boil down all the different roles that you have in your life, what does it mean to be human? What does it mean? A creation of the Creator God. What it means is to fear him and obey him, to keep his commandments. It doesn't mean that the essence of being human, of being a person, is to maintain a strict list of do's and don'ts, to obey all of, like, do this but not do this. That's not what he's saying. It means fear God and live your life honoring him, live your life pleasing him, which Jesus helpfully boiled down for us to love God and love others. To be human is to please God, is to love God and love others, meaning live your life sacrificing for what you want, for what God wants, right? His wants first. That's love God. Sacrifice what I want for what God wants, and then do the same for other people. Love others. Sacrifice what I want for what other people need, not always what they want. That's loving others. And if you live life that way, love God, love others, sacrifice what I want and need for what God wants and what others need, if you live life that way, then you have figured out and you have accepted what it means to be human. That's what it means to be human. It is the duty of all mankind to fear God and obey Him, love Him, and love others. Sacrifice yourself for God and for other people. And if you have lived life that way, you have figured out what it means to be human. That's why God created men for His glory. It doesn't mean that all men fear God, right? To say that, in saying this, I'm recognizing that not everybody does this, right? It's the duty of all mankind to fear God and obey Him, but that's not what all men do. This doesn't mean that everybody does, right? It doesn't mean that all people have a faith in God or live according to that faith or that fear in God, because clearly they don't. So many people have missed completely what it means to be a creation of the Creator, what it means to be human. In fact, if you read Genesis 2 to 3, you'll read that humanity, Adam and Eve, as our representatives, sought to become like God by disobeying Him in the garden. But instead of becoming like God, because they disobeyed God and they didn't fear God, they lost the very thing that made them human. Because they chose to disobey God and not fear God as God, they lost the very thing that made them human. And then, because we follow them in it, we've lost the same. We've lost the fear and the faith, the obedience and prioritizing God's pleasure and His honor. All of humanity has lost what it means to be human. We displaced and upended the created order. We've lost our humanity today. It is the duty of all mankind to fear God and obey Him. And they don't. And we don't. People think to be human is to experience pleasure or to discover and live your truth to achieve. But that's not what the Creator has said that it means to be human. That's our invention of what it means to be human. To be human is to have fear and faith in God and obey Him. This means that if you do that, if you live out your faith and your fear in God, then you've discovered what it means to be human. And the irony of the teacher's entire book is that if you live life this way, following the duty of all mankind, then the conclusion isn't that everything is meaningless. In fact, the conclusion is that everything matters. If you live your life out of a fear of God, faith in God, meaning you'll obey Him, you'll prioritize Him, and then you'll prioritize the needs of others. If you live life that way, then nothing is meaningless and everything matters in life. And the teacher points out in verse 14 that God judges, that God is the judge of everything that you do, meaning everything matters. Everything you do matters. Not nothing is meaningless. Everything has significance if you live life in a fear of God and obeying Him. God looms over everything about life. He's the judge of everything you do. The Creator defined humanity and then watches whether people accept what it is to be human, which direction they're going to choose. Are you going to choose to embrace your humanity and love Me and serve Me and obey Me? Are you going to embrace what it is to be human, or are you going to follow Adam and Eve and much of humanity and reject it and lose what it is to be human? And He looms over observing. And if we accept that the Creator defines and has the right to judge whether or not we embrace our humanity, if we live out the reality that God is to be feared and to be trusted, He's the judge, right? We should obey Him in everything that we do. And if we live that out, then everything about our life matters. Everything. Every choice, every area, every facet, every situation is a chance to be human and to live out our design. It all matters. And everything, if everything about life matters, then we need His wisdom, His words on how to make it meaningful. If the choices I make matter because I'm a creature of the Creator and humanity's supposed to honor Him, fear Him, obey Him, and if that matters, then I want to know how to make the best decisions that He's going to look at and go, you got it. I want to know how to be the best person in whatever role it is that I have so that God looks over me and says, you got it. You figured it out. You are human. You've accepted it. I need His wisdom then on how to be human in the light of the Creator. And so everything has a necessary place in light of our humanity. One, God is the Creator. He's the one shepherd. He is the hero of the story, and He looms over all of life. Fear Him. Trust Him. Two, you, me, we are the creation. We're not the hero. We're a supporting character. We are sheep that have lost our way. We've lost our identity, and we need poked, and we need prodded, and we need to obey, we need to fear, we need to live in faith. And three, this book, and only this book, gives you the poking and the prodding and the guidance and the truth, the foundation that you need to live out your fear and faith in God and obey Him. And if we resolve to put those three things in their place, God is the hero, He's the creator, I'm the supporting character, I'm the creature, and I need poked and prodded to obey Him, and this book does it. If we put those three things in their place, then you have discovered the meaningful life, and everything matters. So we'll conclude with this. If life hasn't felt significant, if you feel like life lacks at times or in completeness, if it feels like it's lacking substance or meaning, then I would guess that something isn't in its proper place and that you've forgotten or you've ignored what it actually means to be human. Somewhere you aren't living out your fear or your faith in God. You're not obeying Him, and you've bought the lie that to be human is something that it's not. To be human is to live in obedience out of fear and faith. If life lacks meaning or substance, then maybe you've upended or ignored what it means to be human, to fear God, obey Him, and follow the proddings. Maybe you aren't trusting His goads. Maybe you're not trusting His words to provide the meaning and the substance that your life needs. If it's lacking in substance, then one of three things isn't in the right place. God the Creator, you're the supporting character, you need the prodding of His words. And so maybe it's His words that aren't providing the meaning for your life. Maybe you're resisting the prodding. Maybe you aren't trusting His book to be your foundation. Maybe it doesn't have a guiding role in your life. But this is what I know from the teacher's words. When everything has its place, you are a human. We should fear and obey God and trust His book. When everything has its place, there is a resonance. There is a harmony in life. There is a restfulness in life because we're in the right place. We're following what God made. Even when things get tough, there is a harmony and a resonance in life because the Creator is the Creator. I'm the creation, and I am doing my best to serve and honor Him, to fear Him and obey Him. So when life feels dull, when it feels insignificant, when it feels meaningless, ask yourself, remember this and ask yourself, have I forgotten what it means to be human? When life feels out of sorts, when it feels like we're missing answers or something's just not there, ask yourself the real question, have I forgotten what it means to be human? Specifically, has God or His word been displaced in my life or in an area of my life? And I'm going to say, when you feel dull or meaningless and insignificant, the answer will be yes. I've forgotten what it is to be human. Something, whether it's God or His words, have been displaced. They've been upended, and I've followed Adam and Eve again, and I've chosen disobedience, and I've forgotten what it means to be human. Don't forget, verse 13. Now all has been heard, and here is the conclusion of the matter. Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is the duty of all mankind. Let's pray. God, I'm sorry for the times that I've significantly overestimated myself, that I've imagined that I am someone to be feared, that I am someone to put my own faith in, and I have forgotten what it is to be human. I'm sorry for the times that I've neglected to notice that You're the hero and not me, and that this book is meant to help me and hurt me. And so I'm sorry for the times when it has hurt and I've shut it and walked away, looking for something else that feels a little bit better. And I would ask that You would just help each of us as we explore and investigate the different areas of our own lives where we see maybe a dullness, maybe an apathy, or a feeling of insignificance and frustration, that we would be honest with ourselves and really investigate and look and see maybe we've made ourselves the hero of that story. Maybe we've forgotten that it is our duty and privilege to bring meaning to our life by obeying You and fearing You and trusting You in every situation. God, help us to follow You even when it hurts. Push us and provoke us. I love You, God, and I pray this in Your name. Amen.